Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast, a discussion of everything under Australia's media and marketing umbrella. I'm Adam Lang, standing in for Neil Griffiths, who's been flown by Adobe to attend the Adobe Summit in Las Vegas, and he'll be reporting in from there with fresh content. Today, we are recording live at the Mumbrella ComsCon Conference 2024 from the excellent Four Seasons Hotel in Sydney. The room is very full, and today's Mumbrella Cast is going to bring you interviews with some of the presenters today to give you their fresh perspective from the ComsCon conference floor. We'll also be publishing fresh stories on mumbrella.com.au today and in the coming days to give you the highlights from ComsCon. As a first-time attendee of ComsCon, I have a lot to learn and a lot to be grateful for. I learned the value of communications professionals in real time throughout my career. Some of that was in the hard-earned best of times, celebrating hit albums of Australian artists, number one radio stations and commercial wins, and other times that experience was on the front line of crises. And yes, that includes working at times with Kyle Sandilands, Darren Hinch and Alan Jones, just to name a few. In those times, good and challenging, I understood how the best communications professionals help you retain and protect your brand and your business. They are literally worth their weight in gold. At Mumbrella ComsCon 2024, we know that the communications game is changing. So whether you're part of an in-house agency or an agency side team, the world of PR and communications is shifting in real time. Mumbrella ComsCon is the summit to connect you with your industry peers and stay on top of the evolving trends and technology. At this conference, ComsCon helps you to discover how to navigate the stormy waters of artificial intelligence, economic uncertainty, crisis communications, solutions to the volatile talent market, and much more. This is a really special day, and it brings you not just the content, but the connections that you need to help you do your job better. You get to ask questions, meet with your peers, and we're going to bring you some of the choice highlights in the Mumbrella Cast today. Now, on the topic of how to create a culture of creative risk-taking, I'm speaking with Kat Kearney, Brand Marketing Director of Who Gives a Crap, and Kiefer Casimore, General Manager 11 and Sustain by TBWA. So, Who Gives a Crap, I think everyone knows. I might just go to Kiefer first because the name of the company intrigues me. 11 and Sustain by TBWA. Now, I'm a music fan, and there's a 1980s film that could be the reference point there, but where does the name come from?
Yes, and well, you wouldn't be wrong in assuming that. So our tagline is very much turn it up to 11. Okay. However, it's not a Spinal Tap reference. It is in reference to our first office, which was in New Zealand, Auckland, on 11 Mayoral Drive, I believe.
Illustrious.
Yeah, but our executive creative director in Russ Tucker in Sydney much prefers the Spinal Tap reference. So happy to go with that today as well.
Good on you. Thanks
you
for the leeway.
Have to sing,
So Kiefer, the presentation began today with a stunning case study, Winnie the Pooh, the deforestation edition. I didn't know enough about that, and I thought it was a truly beautiful book. But can you tell us a bit more about it?
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, I think probably the interesting component of the idea which we explored today was probably around trademark and IP law. So what allowed us to be able to use this particular medium or story was the fact that it had been made available in the public domain in the US, which I think uniquely is something creative agencies and brands will start to explore more. It's worth seeing the different types of brands that are kind of starting to explore this place, in particular in the US. But the book itself is researched to be the most well-loved children's book of all time. So the A.A. Milne original Winnie the Pooh, not to be confused with Disney's Winnie the Pooh and the Red Shirt, are very different, and I need to make sure that's on the record so I don't have Disney's legal team come knocking. But yes, it's certainly an interesting medium that we haven't done before in releasing a book for a brand.
Really good point around copyright. Music and intellectual works of any kind, sometimes those copyrights expire.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there's some really excellent material back in the archives if you care to look.
Yeah, exactly.
The case study itself, you made an interesting comparison to Instagram where you just see the best bits, not all the blood, sweat and tears that might go on into forming the case study. Tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I love a case study, in particular a video case study like anyone else. But as people that work in comms and advertising and marketing, we're very good at selling ideas. And certainly the ultimate purpose of a case study is to really compel a jury of, you know, judges to vote for your piece of work. Or in the case of selling the agency, is to get prospective clients to buy you and go, you guys can produce awesome work. I think interestingly, what we wanted to do today was kind of, you know, pull back the toilet or the shower curtain rather, and allow people to look at the parts that didn't necessarily go to plan, the things that were more challenging, because in a 90-second or 2-minute video, it really doesn't give you all of the ebbs and flows that are required to produce a piece of work like that. And certainly that's the stuff that interests Kat and I.
Mm, thank you. Kat, tell us a bit about your story. From my perspective, Who Gives a Crap to me is such a powerful brand. You know, I became aware of it probably more so through COVID. I'm sure it pre-existed that pandemic, but what a great story. And so you instantly read it and I bound to it and got involved. Then I had to fight for a subscription because it got supercharged demand. But what was your story? How did you get attached to Who Gives a Crap?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a long-time Who Gives a Crap customer. It's funny, I knew about the brand well before COVID, but I mean, obviously COVID was an awful time, but it was what a time for toilet paper. So it was a rapid moment of growth for Who Gives a Crap.
It became a sport at times.
Absolutely. I was, you know, I've spent my career in agency before I was at Who Gives a Crap, and I'd always been curious about the client side move. But my big worry was, you know, it has to be a brand I love, because it's going to be the thing I loved about agency is you're working with lots of different types of clients, you're solving different types of problems, and also it's that really dynamic, creative environment that I really love working in. And so when the role at Who Gives a Crap became available, I thought, oh my gosh, this brings together so many of the things that I'm passionate about. You know, it's got a really strong purpose. I already love the brand. You know, they do a lot of internal creative work. And I was sold. And so I always make this joke about, I hope they're as good on the inside as they are on the outside, because I've had such high expectations. I said, I'm going to feel like Santa's not real if they're awful. But I can confirm it's a pretty great place to work. And so that was about 3 years ago now. And yeah, haven't looked back.
It's such a great point about moving from the agency side and having to go deep, so deep on a particular topic when you go client side, that you have to love it.
Absolutely. But I think some of the thing we spoke about today was, you know, creative work and actually getting it from an idea to something that lives in the world. You have to have so many cross-functional allies in lots of different departments. I love working with people. I love building relationships. And I've actually really loved going deeper, getting under the hood, because, you know, we've got such great colleagues in legal, in exec, in customer happiness that are really cheerleaders for this type of work. And I think that it's a great marriage when you can work with an external partner like Eleven, who are bringing like fresh and bold ideas. But then I'm the person sort of behind the scenes that's going and working with these teams. And I think when you pull those things together, it actually means that these sorts of things can not live and die in a pitch deck, but instead actually get to go out into the world, which is awesome. And it makes our job a lot more fun.
I'm going to ask the same question to both of you, but first to you, Kat. And you pointed out some elements around courage of the brand, because they had to be brave to do what they did. And I'm sure it tested their resilience at all sorts of times. You spoke on stage about giving employees more freedom to fail. How do you do that? Who Gives a Crap?
Yeah, it's a really good question, because I also think I sort of nodded to the fact that values don't mean anything if they're not being lived. I think there's little touches at a company level, for example, from the brilliant Fails Slack channel that we have. That is an open forum for people to come and share a story, and it might be something small as a calendar blunder that ended up, you know, causing a few hiccups to something that actually is quite significant, but it always comes back to what that learning opportunity was. And I think that, you know, we, in our kind of internal sort of team meetings with the brand team, we are absolutely sharing wins, but we're sharing the things that aren't great either. Like, no one wants to just be always focused on the positives. It's not real. I think that, you know, I like to bring a level of authenticity to what I do. And I think it really just connects teams where you have that forum to say something's not great, or something has been a bit of a flop, or I'm worried about this. And so we try and be much more intentional about not just sharing the good, but sharing the bad. I think kind of how we came into today was, we're not going to come and pat ourselves on the back yet. We've got these media metrics you can get a little bit drunk on, but there's a lot of stuff that happens behind the scenes. And so I think you have to enforce that in those kind of, how do you set up a project rear view? How do you set up these kind of ongoing internal meetings? What stories are you sharing? But also, how are you celebrating those learnings as well? And so we try and be really intentional there.
And Kiva, from your point of view, I imagine you have to be like-minded when you work with a client like Egos of Crap, but also in your own business. How do you have that courage? How do you give employees the freedom to fail in your company, 11, and sustain?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think, look, probably not in the structured version that and the examples that Kat gave a moment ago. I think ours is more a methodology around, you know, you'll never get into trouble for trying something new, which is kind of fostered. And I think creativity kind of sits, you know, beyond just the creative department into all areas of the business. And I think creativity naturally builds a muscle around doing things differently and trying things new, you know, for the first time, which I think fosters that type of culture. But it needs to be, I would argue, from the top down. You know, you can't have your most junior and midweight team members kind of trying things but then not seeing it at the top. And I try to, you know, where I can, bring a level of humility in my leadership style and kind of share where things have, you know, cocked up or gone wrong.
That's terrific. So exercising those muscles of creativity and courage. Mm.
Kiefer, I feel like you have to talk about the toilet brief as well. Like, that is such a good
go
example.
Go on. Yeah. Okay. Well, in talking about democratising creativity, so and I can't take the recognition of the idea, but since winning Who Gives a Crap about close to a year ago now, our creative directors, Max and Harry, who I'll give a little shout out to, have created toilet briefs. So we now have mini briefs that sit on the back of cubicle doors.
I love it.
So when you're doing your business, ones or twos, you're able to sit there and ponder. And there is a lot of research that suggests that creativity...
Release those creative thoughts.
Yeah, it happens in the shower. And it's interestingly, we've had probably one or two really cracking ideas that have come off toilet briefs. So hopefully that gives you an idea of the type of culture that's starting to permeate throughout the business.
It does. Thank you. Thank you very much, Kat Kearney, Brand Marketing Director of Who Gives a Crap, and Kiefer Casimore, General Manager of 11 and Sustained by TBWA. Thank you.
Thanks, mate.
Thank you.
Next, I'm talking to Antoine Sabaron, Vice President of Engineering at Cision. Now, Cision acquired Stream some time ago, and the presentation today was Founding to Acquisition, How an Australian Startup Leveraged Technology to Reshape Media Intelligence Globally. And I talked to Antoine about how he came to Stream, the founder story of the business, how they navigate good luck and misfortune along the way, what technology they're using now and where are they heading, and tips for every side hustler and potential founder. It's a great chat. I know quite a bit about Stream. I've been a fan of theirs for some time. And I know Elgar Welch, the founder, he's traveling the world today as part of his responsibilities with Cision.
Right.
And so you've come today to talk to us about Stream and about how you've really navigated this journey. But first, can we start with you and how you came to be working at Stream?
Right, yeah. So I think as we mentioned earlier on the talk, Elgar and I met together through a university club. So we were both part of the sailing club, which I probably should clarify was not so much about sailing, but more about, you know, taking exchange students on beach parties with a bit of sailing involved.
Sailing and socializing.
We were both part of the club as in like running events. So that's how I guess we sort of got to know each other almost through a work angle because we could, you know, prepare and plan events and deliver on that. And we knew we could, you know, rely on each other to get things done. At the time, I was working as a software engineer with an agency here in Sydney. So when he wanted to start Stream and he needed some help, he came to me. I think he also had some other friends that he reached out to. But yeah, I helped him with, you know, a small little thing that he asked me to do for him. I was like, sure, no problem. And then another small thing. And then before you know it, you know, things, I guess, snowballed. And we had a product and we started having customers and we had a business.
That is fantastic. Okay, so from sailing, socializing, engineering, and bonding together in teamwork for sailing and socializing, you came to work together at Stream and engineering.
That's right, yeah.
Wonderful. So let's apply that now to the founder story. The talk today, founding to acquisition, and this, I think, is everything. Sorry, I think this is interesting to any brand. We talked particularly about founders before we started today, and you look at the brand that Stream has become. It's an immense business now, and it's global. So, you know, what began as an idea grew, and through some really clever technology and some very talented people, it's managed to bind together to create this team that's significant commercial value now and part of Cision. So the founder story, when you're starting out with an idea and it's exciting, and then you've got to actually turn that into a business, as you and Elgar work together on Stream, how did that come together? What surprises did you find along the way?
Right, yeah. So I think you never really see it as what it can become. You're always sort of focused on the day-to-day, the small step, solving the problem. So you're always sort of head down. So from the idea, yeah, Elgar was always very driven and you know, moving forward, finding the right people to get involved, because you can't do that yourself. So yeah, very early on he got as I was mentioning earlier in the talk, a team of advisors around him to help him, you know, make the right connection, make the right decision, set up the business from a, you know, a legal entity, and then start working on some ideas on the product. So he reached out to me for the engineering side of it and the software. So it's all very much, I feel, baby step and focusing on what's the next problem you've got to move forward.
So from one baby step to the next, and inevitably you get a few surprises, some good, some not so good along the way. How did you work out, with all those complementary skill sets, all those different skills amongst the board of advisors, how did you navigate some of those challenges together?
Yeah, so surprises, good and bad, I guess. Yeah, a lot of it has to do with building the trust to get people on board, so you can get good surprises where someone believes in you and they might put money on the table to support you, which is fantastic. Or maybe then they can change their mind and think you're not doing something that's good enough, or they just have other priorities. So you can also have bad surprises. I think it did happen to us. That we had investors, you know, changing their mind. And then from the business point of view, yeah, is signing customers, so you can get, you know, in the door and talk and think, oh, we'll never get that contract. But suddenly, I don't know, there's a connection and they believe in it and they want to give you a chance and they do sign. And suddenly you've got, yeah, customers and money coming in, and that's a fantastic to see that happening. Or then, yeah, you've got customer that then decide, oh, you're not the right fit, the product or the business, and then the churn, and that's obviously very difficult to hear that. And from the engineering and product point of view, we're always looking at all the flaws, all the issues, all the problem. That's it can be quite difficult sometimes, right? It's hard to realize, oh, there's actually a lot of other people that are using the product, very happy about it.
And love it.
But
yeah,
you don't really know about it, because happy people don't really talk to you, right? You only hear mostly about the frustrated ones. It's not easy. It's definitely a roller coaster, I say. But yeah, through all these years, you know, Elgar has been fantastic at always, you know, being driven and pushing forward, pushing ahead. And
seeing
getting everybody excited about it,
yeah.
and looking at the big picture and getting people on board. Even hiring staff was quite challenging, because you got to convince someone to, you know, trust you with their career, and you're just two guys in a living room
with that idea.
So there's a bit of luck, but yeah, a lot of building relationship and trust, and finding the right people.
Yeah, and a lot of hard work along the way too. Now, one of the things that I got to learn about Stream early on was, you know, we've had services in the past in the industry of media monitoring, and if you want to learn about where your brand is being reported, you go to certain places. You can try and read it yourself, or you can go to partners who can filter a lot of that for you and give you the information ready-made. When I came to Stream, the technology is stunning. Like, the amount of content it can absorb into the platform and the data it can give you about what stories not only are being published, but what stories are being read and what are getting, you know, what's getting attention and why. That technology interface is really special. Tell us a bit about what the product is doing now and then where you're headed in the future with it.
Right, yeah. So yeah, it took years to build this, you know, iterating on the features, iterating on the content and getting the deals to get the content and then, yeah, making sure we can ingest it and building the systems to handle that at scale and reliably, because it's one thing to build one feature, but it's another thing to build that feature and make sure it always works in all circumstances. So that took, you know, a number of years, but we are at a spot where, yeah, we feel very good about the technology. We're pretty confident. I guess a good measure of this is how many times, you know, we get emergency calls when something is not working and broken, and that's, touching wood here, not happening as much as it used to be.
It's great quality control, isn't it?
That's right. So yeah, from where do we go from there? Well, you know, with media, it's always been about, yeah, more content, more volume, more data around that content, so enriching it to understand, yeah, not just what's being mentioned, but the reach of it and sentiment of it. Yeah, the audience impact, really, because that's what we want to do, right? We want to help people decide, make informed decision about what to do about the news. So they need to have all this information available and get it fast and then being able to rely on it. So yeah, it's all about integrating more sources of content and getting deeper enrichment and deeper understanding of the connection between the stories as well. The connection between social media and traditional media is something we've been working on and we wanted to work on for a long time, because as we see a lot, you know, social media reacts to traditional media, of course, but on the other way as well, traditional media now more often picks up story from social media and then amplify them. So understanding that connection and what's driving the stories and how the story is developed and then fade is quite interesting. So that's something we want to work on more with the help of Cision that enable us to access more content throughout the world and maybe get more understanding of the trends and how stories move across.
That is really interesting. So in a macro sense, the partnership with Cision is opening up, I guess, more geographies, more content. So we've got, I guess, an explosion of the various different types of media. The legacy media was perhaps a small subset now of what is all media, right? As you mentioned, social media and the different forms from Reddit to the Daily Telegraph or the Sydney Morning Herald, the Australian Financial Review. They're all important, but they're exploding, right? And so they're also exploding around the world. So getting the data through Stream to be aware of where your brand is at, where it's being reported, that is so fascinating to me. It's one of the great sort of valuable pieces I got from using the software.
Right, yeah. Yeah, the challenge has definitely been, you know, I guess, sifting through the noise to get what really matters to you. And that's where we put a lot of effort in building a software architecture that's flexible enough that you can quickly refine, because it's hard to get, you know, monitoring perfect the first time, but you want to be able to respond, to adjust, to refine as you go, as a story developed even. You might want to start, you know, track new mentions of different keywords as you understand something is going down a certain path. So yeah, that's very important that we build a technology that can handle this use case and making it, giving it all that power in a approachable way for our customers so they can leverage it.
Brilliant. So look, finally, Antoine, and thank you for your time, both at the summit here, the ComsCon conference, and on this podcast, some tips from you. So for every side hustler and aspiring founder that's out there, what have you learned that you can boil down just a few tips for us to take away?
Right. Yeah. I guess, yeah, you know, it's pretty cliche, but yeah, believe in what you can achieve, especially against larger companies. You might think you've stand no chance, but as it turns out, they might not realize you're able to achieve as much as you think you can, and you can move quite fast, especially with technology these days. There's so much out there that, you know, you can launch a very good product with minimal resources as a one-person team. You can achieve a lot, you can build product fast, and also that pace is a competitive advantage, because you can react quicker, you can iterate quicker than some of the larger companies. So yeah, don't be afraid to take on bigger, larger organization. If you find your niche and you can do things better than they do and serve your customers better and build a relationship with this customer also, that will be a lot closer, you'll have a lot more trust and feedback, and you can really build a better product.
That's wonderful. Antoine Sabourin, Vice President of Engineering at Cision, thank you very much for speaking to the Mumbrella Cast.
Thanks for having me.
Lastly, I talk to Lee Barnes, Chief Customer Officer of Intrepid Travel. His presentation at ComsCon conference today was about the power of public transparency and accountability. It's such an interesting story, Intrepid Travel. Now, can you imagine not just running a travel company, but running it through COVID, how you navigate challenges and opportunities? And he's got some great anecdotes about the power of storytelling and how they use that in their business, how they really treat the communications aspect of what they do to grow their brand.
Comms is an incredibly important part of us to Intrepid because you get to tell some amazing stories, but we also have a lot of risk that comes with it because life happens on trips. And we had to live through one of the biggest crises in travel ever through COVID. And once we stopped traveling, it became really hard to tell stories and communicate. So we had to then, you know, communicate the brand stories, communicate the good work that we were doing at Intrepid through that time. Mm. And the comms leaders, comms part of the business was so important to help shape a narrative so we could keep talking. Yeah, we didn't really want to be silent through this time. We wanted to be able to keep representing the business, even though we weren't operating. You know, pretty hard to be a travel company when you aren't running trips. And the power of comms and storytelling was able to ensure that we were able to keep talking about the things that we were doing that weren't about the product. We did a lot of work around, as I said, climate. So we signed up to the UN-based science reduction targets. We're able to talk about that through work. It gave us opportunity through partnerships and having influence. So yeah, comms can play an amazing strategic role in how you get your stories out there into the world, the positive stuff, but super important to help manage the negative aspects as well. Because, you know, I often say, you know, a good comms person's worth their weight in gold, and the value that they can give is so often not seen in the business because it's about the things that aren't said or the things you do say in place of other things. Mm. And a strong comms team and people can really help you through that. And sometimes you won't see this in the exec report, you won't see in the annual report. It's a lot, quite often, about the stories that aren't told or the words that aren't used that really helps maintain a business reputation. So yeah, I'd be encouraging any CEO or any leader to invest in communications and getting good senior people that are able to craft and help tell that story.
Lee, one of the articles that you mentioned perhaps was on a topic that I read about, which is about elephant tours and how Intrepid had stopped doing elephant tours, or elephant riding tours, I should say. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, it's probably one of the most powerful moments at Intrepid from a transparency and accountability, and even just in our legacy story at the company. So at the time, roughly 10 years ago, about 30 to 40% of our business was through Southeast Asia. Mm. And the must-do, the Instagram moment of that time was an elephant ride. Yeah, everyone wanted to do it. It was the thing we got the most feedback around. People were super excited. And we were a big part of the elephant riding industry at that time. But we started to grow increasingly uncomfortable with that as we started to research and look into it. And to be brutally honest, we shouldn't be riding elephants. They're wild animals. And we did a lot of research to get to that point. But we needed to remove them from our trips. And it was a pretty big commercial risk. Yeah, mm. 30% of your business is going to a destination, and that's one of the big experiences from it. It takes a lot of risk to be able to make that decision.
It's courageous.
But we knew it was the right thing to do, and so we were very transparent about it. We shared the reports that we had done into tourism. We were very open about our positioning with it, and you sort of send it out into the world. You know, as a comms professional, you put the work out there, and you sort of have that baited moment where you're, oh my God, and you frantically refresh Twitter or hit LinkedIn or something to see when you probably should be doing something else, but you're there.
I can't look away.
Yeah, you can't look away. Yeah, nothing happens half the time. You see a spinning wheel of death. And in this case, not only positive things came out. You know, our customers got behind us. They understood. We explained the rationale. And we've continued to grow from that moment. Asia is still one of our biggest parts of our business. Vietnam is one of the biggest, Vietnam and Thailand, one of our biggest sellers. So it actually took us to a position of strength. So yeah, my advice to anyone is really, there's not always going to be a blueprint for this stuff, but once you understand the positive and negative impacts of your business, you need to take action. Yeah, and you need to chart a path forward, but you've got to do it from a place of actually understanding your organization. And I think we see a lot of companies get in trouble where they try and ride a wave of wokeness or a wave of whatever rubbish name it gets called, agenda hopping, but they don't understand their company and where their positive and negative impacts are. And if you do that and you know them, it gives you a position to be when you should be talking about certain topics.
That's a great communication story. Lee Barnes, Chief Customer Officer of Intrepid Travel, thank you very much for speaking to the Mumbrella Cast.
No, thank you. Thanks for having me.
And that's all we've got time for today. Thank you for joining us on the Mumbrella Cast. Remember to hit follow and head along to mumbrella.com.au for more info on everything we've talked about today. Have a great week.
Podcast edit by Abes Audio.